because of foreign wars we wage. More to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws and too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people try to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the dancing wet. Taking your right to self-defense. They say you're stable, but they don't make sense. All the unions always ask for. All we buy is made on foreign shores. Come a day when there'll be real hell to pay. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the dancing.
Adjust that to your home time zone accordingly. All right. Anyway, I seem to be having some issues with the audio, according to what I'm being told right now. I don't know what else could be happening right now. Hopefully, we'll get that squared away. Chief, tell me if it sounds any better. Okay, now he says it's cleared up. At some point, too, if it starts to do it again, if you wouldn't mind doing the call-in and see if it's better there. But as long as it's clear on that end, we're all good. I have a feeling it has something to do with the weather. We just had a horrendous line of thunderstorms pass through here. Did not knock the power off, but it has been intermittent with internet and cable the last little bit. So I would say it is still probably something like that, as the studio here has to connect via internet to the broadcasting platform in New York and then, you know, switchboard and everything else, blah, 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 yakety smackety. Anyway, let's get started. I am scheduled to be joined here at the bottom of the hour by Mr. Mark Hancock, the CEO of Trail Life USA. He's been with us before, but they recently had this this event happen. Just this past few days, it happened about a week and a half ago, based on the information I have here. But anyway, there was a local troop in Pennsylvania that was slated to go on a National Guard tour of one of the facilities. What happens more often than not, so the National Guard's been giving these tours for some time to Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, and other civic-minded organizations, and evidently At some point in time, the folks running these tours decided that the fact that Trail Life USA is a Christian-based organization and that they hold these Christian values so dearly, that means they obviously must be anti-LGBT, which then means that they are hateful bigots, which then naturally means, according to the laws of the leftist, they can't possibly be allowed to set foot on base. Now, that got changed in a hurry as a result of a couple of organizations that provide legal services in the cases of religious liberty cases. I'm just sitting here fumbling for words. How's that for a guy for on the radio? Studying these liberty cases. And what happened shortly thereafter is the National Guard backed down. So we'll have Mark on, and we'll talk about that and how things played out in the second hour. Meanwhile, a story that we have been following since its inception was handed down and made official today. So I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about that right off the top. So for those of you out there who are entrepreneurs and who understand that sometimes the best way to make a quick buck is to appeal to the lowest common denominator, to appeal to the baser instincts, you got some good news today. Essentially, for anybody who has a dream to shock people with a vulgar trademark, something that may feature a dirty four-letter word, for example, well, the United States Supreme Court's given you the ruling that you've been waiting for. In a 6-3 decision, the High Court overturned the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office's nearly century-long ban on registering immoral and or vulgar, that would be the word I'm trying to say, trademarks. In the decision, the High Court held that the refusal by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to accept the registration of the clothing brand Fucked, F-U-C-T, it amounted to a viewpoint discrimination, which, of course, according to the High Court, is a violation of the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Eric Brunetti, well, he's the one who filed the suit against the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office when it rejected his clothing line under the provision outlined in the Lanham Act's ban on immoral and scandalous messaging. Now, according to the Hollywood Reporter, they provided some history leading to the decision that was handed down today. And taking straight from there, this is quoting, in December of 2017, Brunelli got the United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit to hold that the Lanham Act bans on immoral or scandalous material was unconstitutional. That seemingly opened the door for more registrations of F-bombs and other profane marks that could be associated with sponsors. The Federal Circuit's 2017 decision came months after the Supreme Court's opinion involving Simon Tam, the Asian-American frontman of The Slants, who convinced a majority of justices to strike down a separate provision of the Lanham Act, one that looked down on the registration of disparaging remarks. The Tam case, it certainly had not exactly the same kind of mindset that the Brunelli one did, but the government was nevertheless hopeful that its prudent concerns would survive another day. They did not. Now, the government maintained that the Lanham Act did not violate the First Amendment, arguing that trademarks symbolized a subsidy for messaging that the government wished to promote rather than a ban on that form of speech being sold in a good or service. So So both the Tam and the Brunelli decisions, the Supreme Court had largely rendered that argument obsolete. Justice Elena Kagan wrote the majority opinion and was joined by Clarence Thomas, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, and Brett Kavanaugh. Mostly conservative justices on the bench. But Elena Kagan, certainly not one, still wrote the majority opinion, along with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the notorious RBG. Anyway, Kagan wrote, quote, "We hold that this provision infringes the First Amendment for the same reason it too disfavors certain ideas." Now, though the government claimed to be content neutral, Kagan noted that such bans on profanity and other vulgar statements amounted to a subjective standard that has been inconsistently applied in the past. Quoting again from Kagan's writings, the viewpoint bias in the law results in viewpoint discriminatory application. The PTO, that's the Patent and Trademark Office, the PTO, for example, asked whether the public would view the mark as shocking to the sense of truth, decency, or propriety, calling out for condemnation, offensive, or disreputable. Now, using those guideposts, the PTO has refused to register marks communicating immoral or scandalous views about, among other things, drug use, religion, and terrorism. But all the while, it has approved registration of marks expressing more accepted views on the same topics. Justice Samuel Alito concurred with Kagan, noting that the decision does not call for moral relativism, but a preventative measure against government exploitation, saying, quote, "Our decision is not based on moral relativism," wow, that sounds familiar for some reason, "but on the recognition that a law banning speech deemed by government officials to be immoral or scandalous can easily be exploited for illegitimate ends." So also, as noted by the Hollywood Reporter, the Brunelli decision could have far-reaching implications on the type of speech regulated by the Federal Communications Commission. Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Stephen Beyer, along with Justice Sonia Sotomayor, all dissented. Byers wrote, quote, "How much harm to First Amendment interests does a bar on registering highly vulgar or offensive trademarks work?" Not much, according to the good justice. The statute leaves businesses free to use highly vulgar or obscene words on their products, and even to use such words directly next to other registered trademarks. Indeed, a business owner might even use a vulgar word as a trademark, provided that he or she is willing to forego the benefits of registration. So they kind of made this backdoor excuse about it, which to me indicates that that they're actually acknowledging there is a free speech issue at the heart of this. Now, that to me is somewhat surprising, because there has always been, according to our government, a certain amount of restrictions on free speech. There are certain things that you are not permitted to do. I mean, primarily the First Amendment is designed to protect your political speech. There is nothing wrong with purveying an interest in public decency or providing a moral facilitation over public airwaves, for example. But no doubt this is going to be used to attack the FCC. Bringing it boy in the chat room asks, will this count on license plates on your vehicle? Well, I have no doubt that at some point we will see this kind of work its way down. I think that as long as this decision holds, you're going to see this as an opening of the floodgates of who knows what. I, for one, I'm not really big on using the shock value of profanity. Although, if you have some clever way of using something that sounds an awful lot like a profanity, like in the case of Brunelli and his clothing line, F-U-C-T, well, then I'm going to give you some points on originality, but I'm still going to say you can be far more creative than that. But at the end of the day, the justices have ruled, and according to every good leftist everywhere, that means that it's settled law. Except that we all know better, don't we? We'll see what happens as it continues. Bringing the voice that's sweet. Obviously, he's got something in mind for his license plate. In fact, you know, it could be good for the income for a lot of states if you see this follow suit. Because personalized plates do cost a little more. Be interesting to see some of the stuff that's out there. I'm not exactly excited by this, though. I mean, I'm not overly upset by it. You know, I'm not passionate that this is horrible. But at the same time, I kind of like the idea that people aren't just out all willy-nilly. Who am I kidding? Seriously. Where was the last time that you went and there was more than four people and you weren't hearing profanity kept being spewed by at least one of them? I guess the degradation of our society is far enough along in 2019 that this just doesn't hurt anything. Case closed. Dismissed. Let's move on. At the end of the day, just virtue signaling if I want to whine about it anyway, so I'm going to stop doing two things that I don't like doing. Cute, Chief. Anyway, this would be my opportunity to remind you, if you have the opportunity to come listen to the show live, by all means, do so. Get into this chat room and meet these folks right now. We've got Chief, who was in here first. We got Bringing It Boy, and we got Vorpal Bite hanging out as we go. Now, something else. You know, this was kind of making its rounds today. It's a story that kind of broke over the last weekend, and it's slowly been building some momentum, and today it got a little more attention. And it has a lot to do with the Intersectionality Coalition, which we've talked about ad nauseum, actually, sometimes here. The coalition is doomed to failure. Because it's only a matter of time before the individual members realize that their agenda and goals are not the same as everyone else's. And in fact, everyone in the coalition cares more about their agenda than they do any other part of the coalition's unified front. And sometimes the rules for determining the hierarchy for the intersectionality coalition can be kind of complicated. And sometimes they can be so challenging, in fact, that even members of the so-called alliance can get a little confused about what is the most woke. So, and a particular case in point, recently a group of homeless advocates in San Francisco decided to express their displeasure with a local sushi restaurant. The restaurant in question, I cannot pronounce the first name. Well, actually, I'm just not going to try to. Azakia. Anyway, this local sushi restaurant is located in the Castro District of San Francisco, which has, of course, been long known as a safe space for members of the LGBTQ community. This restaurant was called to the red carpet by the Coalition on Homelessness. And what was their issue? What was the crime committed by the sushi restaurant? Well, they were called to the carpet for the high crime of putting pride, wink, wink, ahead of the homeless. Now, the issue in this case being that the restaurant decided to place a large rock in a Zen garden. It has kind of a little outdoor nook for a rock garden that's located in the front of the restaurant. The stone was then painted with the gay pride rainbow. And in the eyes of the Coalition on the Homeless, well, this large rock is taking up valuable space that should be available for transients to set up camp. Now, the Coalition on the Homeless used Twitter and their own outlet, Street Sheet, clever name, not, to attempt to shame the purveyors of the raw fish into submission. The Coalition accused the sushi restaurant of hating the homeless while virtue signaling in order to boost its faux progressive credentials. Clearly, for the sufficiently woke, this is an unacceptable, and it must be remedied. Now, Rhonda Richards, who happens to be the beverage director and bar manager for the sushi restaurant in question, responded to the accusations in a piece by Madeline Wells over on sfgate.com, if you're interested in looking that up, saying that the staff, which is nearly 100% LGBTQ, by the way, the staff voted for painting the rock to show support for the community, and that there is another safe space in the entranceway of the restaurant that homeless people are free to use as a shelter. I kid you not, they said this. Now, TJ Johnson, a reporter for Street Sheet, and the person who first took their outrage about the rock public, he wasn't satisfied with the response from the staff, making his case that the rock should be removed, saying, quote, "Even though it may not have been intended as such, it has the effect of being hostile architecture." He then added, "It can still conceivably prevent somebody from sheltering themselves from the pouring rain." Now, I would like to take this moment to remind everyone who's slightly to the left that these little Zen gardens and doorways and restaurants, that's not their intended purpose. You know, just anyway. So despite Johnson's continued opposition to the Rainbow Rock, things seem to have kind of smoothed over just a bit, at least between the Coalition on the Homeless and the restaurant. The Coalition deleted the original tweet and then posted a message saying, "Y'all, we made a mistake. While rocks are a common part of anti-homeless architecture, this particular rock is not. It's a Japanese garden, and the sushi restaurant is a valued member of the community and is supportive of its homeless neighbors. We apologize and offer deep appreciation to the staff." Okay, so what happened? A common sense moment of clarity where they realized that, you know what, sometimes a rock is just a rock? Perhaps a gentle reminder from the social justice warrior types that the LGBTQ protected status among the woke is not to be challenged. Whatever it was that led to the change of tone from the Coalition on Homeless, you can bet that it had little to do with a respect for the business owner. In fact, it may very well be a case where things have gotten so bad in San Francisco that no one there even notices anymore that having so many homeless that they have started building makeshift rafts to literally move out onto the bay and just have so many homeless as to necessitate the need for a poop app, they may not realize anymore that that's simply not normal for an American city. Putting that aside for now, I'm sure that the idea that a business owner has the right to make their establishment as appealing to customers as possible doesn't enter the minds of the woke folk. The notion that homeless people camped out around a business of any kind can be off-putting is undoubtedly as foreign to the modern San Franciscan as a Martian landscape would be for most people. It is incredible what people can get accustomed to, especially when a political doctrine blinds those people from the reality that surrounds them. It would appear that the coalition of homeless has, I'm sorry, coalition on homelessness has made the move from homeless advocates to advocating for homelessness. After all, it is one thing to work to protect the homeless while pressuring politicians to enact policies that would reduce homelessness. It's something entirely different to direct your energies to remove barriers from homelessness. The focus, instead of being on the root causes of the problem, seem to be on how to make it easier to be homeless in San Francisco. While some folks, I'm sure, would say that T.J. Johnson was looking to provide compassion, well, his post, as is often the case when virtue signaling outrage occurs, his post misses how genuine compassion would look. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't question Johnson's intentions, but sympathy for homelessness is hollow without a quest for solutions. Solutions to issues that can only come from honesty about the policies that have led to this crisis on the streets of what was once one of the most beautiful cities in this country. And while the answers to this problem may be unclear to some, there are a couple of things that are very clear indeed. There are no solutions to this problem that can be achieved by attacking a local business owner, and nothing can be solved by moving a rock, which, by the way, doesn't look like it's going to be moved anyway. Moving the rock that would only make space for one, maybe two people to occupy while they remain without a place other than the streets to go to. All right, so there's my two cents on that. Let's do the Edwards Notebook, Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day, and then it will be time to bring on today's guest. So stay with me, guys. I will be right back.
President Trump is sending 1,000 more troops to the Middle East, but is that the correct course of action? Hello, I'm Ron Edwards on today's page from the Edwards Notebook. According to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Iran definitely carried out attacks against oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz. Acting U.S. Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan stated, quote, "The recent Iranian attacks validate the reliable, credible intelligence we have received on hostile behavior by Iranian forces and their proxy groups that threatened United States personnel and interests across the region." Iran has also bragged about breaking the uranium stockpile limit set in the deal that temporarily limits their uranium stockpiles. But are 1,000 more U.S. troops really to solve or change things in Iran? I say no, because 1,000 troops is not enough to defeat a depraved, ideologically driven regime. Either go hard for a swift, decisive military victory or leave it alone. The Trump administration cannot afford to get bogged down in a long, protracted struggle that would take attention away from draining the swamp here in America and re-electing President Trump. I'm Ron Edwards. Join me live Fridays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on AmericaMatters.us.
Sponsored by the Tri-County Liberty Coalition.
Hey
This is Dan Perkins with your songs and stories for soldiers, veterans, tip of the day. Do you remember when you were in basic training or your first duty assignment? I do. What about those men and women who trained with you? Have you ever wondered what happened to them? I have. What about some of the people who served with you a good part of the time you were in the military? Ever wonder what happened to them? I have. Do you think they might also be wondering what happened to you? I think so. Would you like to find out? Here is your veteran's tip of the day. Find out about your buddies by joining TogetherWeServed.com. This is a free service, and TWS has reunited over 1.8 million vets in all branches of the service, and they can help you find your friends. You may be surprised at who you can find. This has been your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day.
The presidential campaign season is just revving up, but it may be the easiest for voters to figure out. Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, both President Trump and his Democrat Party opponent will have their own unique agendas. President Trump's agenda will include growing the U.S. economy. His Democrat opponent's agenda? Stop Trump. The Trump agenda will, of course, include securing the borders. The agenda of Trump's Democrat opponent will be to stop Trump. Low unemployment is also part of the president's agenda. His Democrat opponent will zero in on his or her agenda to stop Trump. Trump's agenda also includes bringing back America's industrial prowess. His Democrat opponent's agenda? Stop Trump. Trump's agenda includes fair trade deals and lower taxes. The Democrat agenda? Stop Trump. Affordable medical care. A further reduction of regulations and improving infrastructure round out the president's agenda, while his one-track pony Democrat opponent's agenda is stop Trump, which also means to stop America. I'm Ron Edwards. Let's meet Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on AmericaMatters.us and 12 a.m. Sundays on Talk America Radio Network.
Ron Edwards, the new voice of America.
Sponsored by the Tri-County Liberty Coalition.
All right, everybody, I am back. Thanks for staying with me through that brief break. I am, however, unfortunately, without my scheduled guest. I did call, left a voicemail, and hopefully he'll check it and he'll call back. I'll be keeping an eye on the switchboard, although I don't necessarily feel great about that because the last time I did it, they were trying to call and it wasn't showing up on my switchboard. I heard all about it after the fact. Anyway, hopefully we'll get to that point, but let's delve in a little bit more with the conversation because the folks in the chat room are really having a good conversation about their viewpoints on it. And, you know, that's what the chat rooms are for. It is a great opportunity to have some conversations and, you know, that's part of what we do this for, too. And I think it just raised some questions. Exactly what does present solutions for homelessness? I think there are some things that clearly do not. Simply throwing money at the problem doesn't help anything. Money is a useful tool, but it must be focused in the positive direction. You must know what you're spending it on, and you must avoid the age-old leftist ideology that, well, this plan would have worked, we just didn't spend enough money on it, we need more. That's the mentality that we've been watching for some time now. We have a mayor, as we've been talking about recently, in the city of Los Angeles who ran on the notion of ending homelessness in Los Angeles, and instead homelessness continues to increase exponentially since he's been in charge and they've used his programs. San Francisco's homelessness situation has arisen from deciding that they want to be the homeless capital of the state of California. It's one of the few places where you can go to sign up for your state and federal benefits without having to have a corporeal address. They've establish themselves. There's no movement to really move people forward. You know, programs that are designed to help people develop skills, to get jobs, to get into housing, temporary shelters, things of this nature that are intentionally temporary, that require effort on your part to move forward. These are programs that have worked in the past and have kept homelessness low. The folks on the left will instantly say, you're talking about the heartless programs. You're talking about being mean and cruel to people who are down on their luck. But here's the terrible, terrible truth about a lot of the people in San Francisco in particular. Most of the homeless don't want to be in a shelter. They would rather stay on the streets. Sometimes it's because most of the shelters do in fact require that you be drug-free. At least while you're there. Keep yourself clean. You don't have that same freedom to be out on your own. So they fight against it. There's also a terrible truth that grifting in the city of San Francisco is not exclusive to the homeless. Just giving you a personal story. The one time that I went to the city of San Francisco on a business trip, we were there working a trade show, and there was this one diner close to the hotel that we were staying in, and we saw, Vorp's right, I'll circle back around Vorp, we saw this person head out, and they were leaving about breakfast time. That's about the only time we were hitting it. But one evening while we're there, we decided, hey, you know what? We've liked breakfast every day this week. So let's try out dinner. Let's see what dinner's like there. And then we were there, and the only face that we recognized from the morning shift that was still there was an older gentleman. So we kind of got the notion that it was probably the owner, the proprietor of the restaurant. And that was, of course, confirmed when we saw this same person that we saw walk out of this. Well, it was basically a high-end deli, if you will. The same person that we saw walk out a couple of mornings, and we figured that they just come in there and either use the bathroom and they were nice to let them, or that they just had to keep running them out. But one or the other, that was the assumption. Well, we saw this guy come back in. And he went straight upstairs, and there were apartments over the restaurant. And it's like, wow, isn't that the same guy from this morning? And the gentleman I was with was like, yeah, that's definitely him. About 40 minutes later, because we were lingering, we were taking our time, we were in no hurry. It had been a long day, and all we had left to do was go back to the hotel room and finish up some paperwork before turning in anyway. And we see this young man come down the stairs again, clean-shaven, dressed sharp, and yells over at the gentleman that we presumed was the owner, saying, hey, Pop, be back later. And I'm pointing and saying, isn't that the same guy who came in here dressed like a homeless person just a little while ago? And evidently the owner heard me, and he's like, yeah, you're right. That's my son. He goes out every day, and instead of working a real job, he goes out, he panhandles, and he brings in a ton of money, and at the end of the day, he could do just about anything if he wanted to, but he's making enough money panhandling out there that he just doesn't bother to get a job. Those clothes he was wearing, he buys that with the money that he philanders from tourists in the city. He's about to buy a brand new car. And so then we talked a little bit. He asked us where we were from, and we commiserated a little bit because the gentleman that I was with has a couple of sons who have been challenging, we'll say that. And, you know, there was some shared commiseration between those two, and the conversation got rather in-depth. But, you know, the point being, as we go back around, that it's not just homeless people you see on the street, but things have gotten so crazy. Things have gotten so crazy in the city that now they literally do have this app to warn you where all the poop is, because all the homeless people that are legitimately homeless, they don't bother to go anywhere. They just go to the bathroom on the streets. Now, if you're a regular listener of this show, then you are well aware of that fact. But I kid you not, just the other day, I was having a conversation with someone who had no idea that it was that way. And they literally thought I was lying to them, so they went and checked it out for themselves, came back and said, "Man, I would have swore you were just trying to pull my leg, but I can't believe that's happened." Now, the only way to solve both those problems, and it's a problem with people out grifting, and it's a problem with homeless people that are creating a third world country situation with the city and its immense sanitation issue. And it's going to sound cold-hearted, but as Vorpabite pointed out, you just can't allow the homeless to live on the streets. This is the same thing that's happened in Los Angeles, and we're going to see it in other leftist-controlled cities before long, too, because they want you to feel sorry for these folks. Now, for the folks that have no option and who's lost their homes through no fault of their own and who are trying to get back on their feet, I do feel bad for those folks, and I'd be perfectly willing to help them in some reasonable, charitable fashion, not through the forced assistance of the government. That's not the role of government. The role of government is to provide the opportunity for people who are running a restaurant, per se, much as the sushi restaurant that I mentioned in this article that I wrote today, then I kind of read off to you. The idea is that these folks have not only a desire to be as appetizing as they possibly can, but they have a responsibility to their customers to provide a safe and sanitary facility. Now, the neck of the woods that I'm from, we have homeless issues in parts of Knoxville, and in a past life, I was a quick service restaurant manager, and we had some real issues in one particular part of town when I worked for a quick service chain. We had to deal with it. Now, we tried to be as nice as we could. We didn't automatically run off folks that were being respectful to our customers as long as they were relatively clean. We had little choice but to run them off when they started harassing our customers. When folks were coming in, they'd be begging for money. It's like, "No, you can't do that here. Get out." "Oh, how can you be so mean? These poor people." We have a responsibility to our customers first. Something that you've got to realize is that these folks, if they've had an opportunity to get back on their feet, they need to take it. You want to offer solutions for homelessness, it begins by not being so permissive. When you remove the obstacles, like I pointed out, when you remove the obstacles of being homeless, then you stop being an advocate against homelessness and you start being an advocate for it. It's a very different set of circumstances when you are looking at trying to offer protections. You know, you want to offer reasonable protections. You don't want people simply just out on the streets exposed to the elements where they're going to get sick and die. If these are the folks that are there through no fault of their own, then okay, let's figure it out. Let's take a look. Let's let the local charities step in and do something. But let's not get upset if the city council has decided they're not going to let the city parks be overrun by these folks anymore. Let's not get out of our minds when we recognize and realize that, oh, by the way, it's not acceptable to have people camping out at every little alcove your business may have on the outside. this T.J. Johnson guy, who just kept going on in his postings about anti-homeless architecture. These things are put in place. They're designed to make it difficult for the homeless to be. What's wrong with that? If you're a business owner and you're trying to bring in more customers, what's wrong with that? That's not being dispassionate, failing to be compassionate to your fellow man who's down on their luck. That's you living up to the responsibilities of being someone who's in business. Your first concern is meeting the needs of your customers. Now, the folks in San Francisco have gotten so far out of touch with that concept. Things have gotten so bad there now that they don't even realize, they don't even recognize that it's not a normal condition they have going on in their city now. It's bad enough that the only reason this got called out at all, the only reason this got reversed, according to the coalition itself, is because in the effort, they actually were attacking somebody who's on the intersectionality coalition pyramid of the hierarchy. They went after the LGBT pride. You can't go after that that rock there. It's a big rock. Kind of cool. Have this Zen rock garden in this little alcove. And then to have this big rock in the middle of it. Evidently, it had been painted gold before they decided to paint it into the rainbow rock. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, that's kind of neat, actually. It's a nice little toss into the fact that it's a sushi restaurant, it's Japanese style, and then you have a Japanese-style rock garden out here. It's very zen. It's very cool. I like the idea. I think that is the type of theme that works well. And the fact that the owner of said restaurant happens to have two children that are members of the LGBT community makes it understandable why they may have a rationale for looking to show some level of support for the pride ideology. Throwing the fact that being in the Castro district, being one of the first recognized gay communities in a state that is not exactly known for having few of them, I think it's almost mandatory to be in business that they have something similar to that in that particular location. Vorp says, how about one of them bonsai trees out front? Well, that'd be fine, too. I'm not talking about the art of the rock itself. I'm just saying I like the idea of a little Zen garden, given the space you got. But, yeah, bonsai tree would work great, too. Sadly, they'd probably want to hang little rainbow pride flags from it and all that. But, again, that's up to the owner of the business. He's got a million and one reasons why he may want to show support of the pride movement, considering the location, considering family members, considering that maybe that makes up a huge chunk of his clientele. And if that's the case, again, what's the first rule of business? You provide the best, most appetizing opportunities for your customers. It doesn't matter if you're even in the restaurant business, but it does make it more important that a sanitation issue is dealt with if you are. just checking out the chat room. I love the conversation in there. The point still comes back to a very simple one, though. Insanity has been and can still very well be defined as doing the same thing over and over and yet over again and expecting a different outcome. At this point, there is a large number of well-meaning but unfortunately brainwashed group of people who have yet to figure out that leftists typically just want to take their money. And that's pretty much the end of it. They want to take it through taxes, and then they want to waste a bunch of money in a fashion that tends to line the pockets of themselves or their friends. That's what they like to do. Real solutions is not something they're looking for. Chief telling jokes in the chat room. Quick shout out to Boyd the Alaskan, who's joined us, by the way, and also looks like coming in the last minute, Joseph Gibson has joined us as well. Great to see you guys in here before we shut down. But as disappointing as it was not to get our scheduled guest on today for whatever reason, we will we'll see if we can't get rescheduled, because I definitely wanted to talk about that issue. But at the end of the day, though, it's very disheartening that this only makes the rounds of social media. This only gets into the views of the social justice warrior from the mindset of, oh, no, you didn't. From the mindset of, you attacked the LGBT pride symbol instead of standing up with the rest of the coalition. Bruh, homeless people aren't even part of the coalition. Bruh, we can't get the politicians to support ending homelessness because people who are homeless typically don't have money and typically don't show up to vote. There is no benefit to the politicians when the politicians are only worried about winning elections or enriching themselves. Sadly, that's the world we live in. There's a reason why the harsher techniques tend to work. You don't want to make it easier to be homeless if you want to reduce homelessness. You want to provide multiple rationales for these folks to be motivated to stop being homeless. If you want to spend taxpayer dollars on things that might help these people, then let's spend it on shelters where they will be brought to when they're round up off of the streets. Shelters that they won't be permitted to leave until the sun rises the next day, as a bare minimum, as an alternative to being incarcerated in the local jails. Let's spend the money on drug rehab programs that will help these folks that are homeless because they have a addiction problem they couldn't deal with. VORP also makes another great point. No address, no vote. Let's spend taxpayer dollars on programs that will actually help to get those that are in need of pharmaceutical aid for mental health reasons, that they are actually able to get that. Let's do the things. If you're going to spend taxpayer dollars, let's spend taxpayer dollars on things that will actually help to alleviate homelessness. And in the meanwhile, let's not make it so much fun to be homeless. And I say that, and somebody's going to say, well, it's not fun to be homeless. There's a reason why so many of these folks, specifically in the cities of San Francisco and Los Angeles, have said point blank that they would prefer to be homeless, that they don't want to be off the streets. The streets is where they want to be. Why? Because they have freedom, and they still are able to collect benefits. The police no longer harass them. Every possible motivation to not be homeless has been alleviated and massaged to the point that there's no reason to want to do anything else. Sure, the weather can be crappy sometimes, but again, like I said earlier, it's amazing what you can become accustomed to when that's what you're motivated to do. It's amazing what the men who stormed the beaches in D-Day could accomplish simply because they knew there was a job to do. The mindset is so different today. The mindset then was, crap, the bank came and took my house. Well, it's time to go to work and fix this. The mindset today is, you know what? Nah, I don't need a house. The government will take care of me. And so we waste millions and billions of taxpayer dollars to create third world country conditions in what used to be some of the jewels of the Western Hemisphere. Bringing It Boy says, if a proposition work in the favor of the people, the courts overturn it. It happens. Forbes says, very soon the leftists will vastly outnumber conservatives. When that happens, the conservatives will lose representation. What do you think is going to happen then? That's a reality that we have to face. That's what's going on in the state of California right now. Thanks to drawing to the districts in a way that the conservatives in the state have very little power left. Even when they show up in strong numbers and they vote their conscience, they're still struck down either by the state courts or the federal courts, as pointed out by Bringing It Boy. It's unfortunate, particularly in a city that's in a state, that the Democratic politicians have made it quite clear that they care far more about the well-being of illegals who've migrated across our border than they do about the citizens that already live there. And if the program doesn't involve padding their pockets in some fashion, they're just not interested, and they do not care to solve problems. They only want issues to bring you out to the next ballot box opportunity. It is shameful. They should be ashamed. And at the end of the day, it's up to the voters in the cities to stop being brainwashed, to stop falling for the leftist social justice warrior nonsense, and to stand up and recognize that true compassion sometimes requires tough love. True compassion, true caring, means that sometimes you have to say words like no, and you can't do that. True compassion means that you are willing to do the hard work in order to make things better. It means that you're willing to seem heartless, cold, and cruel in order to motivate people to do better with their lives. That's what's needed. That's what's necessary. That's not what they've got. And that's going to have to be it for tonight. So thank you so much, everybody, for being here tonight. Appreciate it as always. Shout outs to Chief, Bringing It Boy, Boyd the Alaskan, Vorpal Bide, and even Joseph, who popped in and then popped back out. Thank you guys for being here, even if it's limited. And in the meanwhile, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in a little bit of effort, but more importantly, to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. Good night, y'all. I'm out.
is using both hands. Founders knew the Second Amendment was the final one to keep, to hold our other rights intact so we'd never become sheep. Stalin, Hitler, Mao Amin, and Pol Pot, they told the things that you never forgot. Is using both hands. Well, I prefer the 308 to the tiny 223. Gives me more than 1,000 yards to protect my family.
Using both hands.